Welcome to Healthcare Rounds, the podcast serving you the ins and outs of health policy and business topics, as well as our take on the rapidly evolving healthcare delivery ecosystem. I'm your host, John Marchica, CEO of Darwin Research Group and faculty associate at the W.P. Carey School of Business and the College of Health Solutions at Arizona State University. This week, I'm speaking with Dr. Naomi Fried, a national thought leader on healthcare innovation, who's founder and CEO of Health Innovation Strategies, a consulting firm specializing in innovation and digital health. She advises pharma companies, payers, and providers on innovation program design and activities in digital health strategy. Naomi was previously Biogen's first VP of Innovation, Medical Information, and External Partnerships. She developed Biogen's Innovation Beyond the Molecule strategy to deliver non-pharmacological value to patients and providers. Naomi has served on the advisory boards of the Healthcare Business Women's Association, MedCity News, Digital Collaboration Solutions, the Journal of Clinical Innovation and Technology, as well as the director of American Telemedicine Association. She was also appointed a member of the Governor of Massachusetts Innovation Council. Her awards include being named one of West's notable women entrepreneurs in science and technology, and one of Healthcare IT News Health Information Technology Men and Women of the Year Award. Naomi received her PhD in material science from MIT and her BS in chemistry from the University of California, Berkeley. Naomi, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. Really appreciate your coming on Healthcare Rounds. To get things started, you know, I had a chance to review your bio, and of course we had our call previously, and you really have an interesting background. I think it would be helpful to help orient our audience and talk to me a little bit about your background as well as your current company that you're running.
Sure. Well, thank you, John, and thank you again for inviting me to participate in Healthcare Rounds. I'm delighted to be here today. By way of background, after I finished my PhD at MIT in material science engineering, I actually took a left turn and got involved with a series of early stage healthcare IT startups in the Bay Area. Was the first CEO of a spin-out from Stanford School of Medicine, and had the opportunity to work with a variety of healthcare startups and venture capitalists for a couple of years. Was then hired into Kaiser Permanente and became their first vice president of innovation and advanced technology, and helped build their first formal innovation program there and support the establishment of the Sidney Garfield Healthcare Innovation Lab. From there, we actually moved from the West Coast to the East Coast, and I became the first chief innovation officer at Boston Children's Hospital and built and led the Innovation Acceleration Program. And our focus was on enhancing the innovation culture within Boston Children's, making it easier to test and develop new innovations in care delivery. I was actually recruited from Boston Children's Hospital to Biogen. I became their vice president of innovation and external partnership. And the focus of Biogen really was on developing innovation beyond the molecule strategy, looking at how we could use digital health to extend and expand the impact of Biogen's therapies, as well as considering how digital health tools could be used more effectively in research and development. After leaving Biogen, I founded my own consulting firm, Health Innovation Strategies. Health Innovation Strategies is a boutique firm. We focus on innovation program design and optimization, as well as innovation activities and digital health strategies. We support large healthcare organizations, providers, pharma, payers, in thinking about how they can better engage with the digital health community, as well as build and optimize innovation programs.
So a couple of things jump out at me about your background, Naomi. First of all, not many people walk out of school with a PhD in material science engineering to be a startup CEO. So that's interesting. But also, you know, innovation is something that throughout your career, that this word just keeps popping up. So what was it that, I don't know, what caused you to kind of go in this direction, the left turn that you described?
I think that I have always been an entrepreneur at heart, and I love building new things. And I actually had some great mentorship coming out of graduate school, and that was how I was introduced into the field of healthcare and was able to get involved with a whole series of startups and venture capitalists. I don't think I was really thinking about innovation per se during those early years. I think I just enjoyed building new things and the challenge that comes with it. It really wasn't until I was asked to become the Vice President of Innovation and Advanced Technology at Kaiser that I started to think about innovation really as a discipline, and that there is actually a way to innovate successfully, and obviously many ways to innovate unsuccessfully, and to think about what innovation really is. And within the healthcare industry, I think that innovation is about trying out new ideas, whether it's new technology, whether it's new workflow, whether it's new care delivery processes. And I think we talked about previously the fact that innovation is one of the most overused words and gets thrown around a lot. But it's important to really understand what innovation is and to have an approach and a structure to innovation. It was actually while I was at Kaiser Permanente, where I was trying to sort of educate myself about what innovation was, that I developed the innovation lifecycle to really explain what the process was that a large healthcare organization goes through when trying to innovate.
Talk to me more about that innovation lifecycle. I'm intrigued.
The innovation lifecycle, as I conceived of it, is really a six-step process with a very critical gap in the middle. So the first step is simple. It's initiation. It's identifying a problem that you want to solve. It's actually pretty important to start with a problem and not with a solution. I think we see a lot of failed innovation where people come with a technology and say, this technology is going to cure a problem or solve a problem. And then they go looking for the problem. But really what you need to do is start right with the problem. So that's initiation. After initiation comes ideation. And that's where you start to envision possible solutions that you want to test, ways that you want to solve that problem. And there's many ways to ideate. You can brainstorm. I encourage innovators also to look at solutions from other industries. That can be a very rich source of ideas. Coming out of that second stage ideation, we move into the pilot phase. And that's where you really test and develop sort of the best theory that you have to solve your problem. And, you know, if this is where you're going to fail, if you're going to fail, it happens now in the pilot phase. And that's okay, because I think, you know, fast, cheap failure is actually a form of success. But the pilot phase is really about building a mock-up. It's testing your hypothesis. It's collecting data. Then if you've had a successful pilot, in the ideal world, you would just tell people about this great new idea and they would adopt it and, you know, everything would be wonderful. But the fact of the matter is, we don't live in that ideal world where people embrace change quickly and readily. And so what you find in many large healthcare organizations is the operationalization gap, or OGAP, when people have a successful pilot, but then find that it's hard to operationalize it. It's difficult to get people to adopt it. There seems to be some sort of barrier or chasm there that stops this idea from being broadly accepted. And this term, the OGAP, is something that I coined. I noticed it first at Kaiser, and I've been observing it ever since. And the OGAP is really, you see more in large healthcare organizations, not so much in small healthcare organizations. And you see it where organizations have diffuse leadership. So less of an issue in command and control organizations like maybe the U.S. military, but very prevalent in large provider organizations and in pharma and in payer organizations. So a lot of people ask me, what can you do to close the OGAP or get across the OGAP? So, you know, you can engage some traditional tools like change management and education, but actually what I have found the best approach to closing the OGAP is actually to plan for it in advance. And if you get the folks that are involved in operationalization, which is the phase after the OGAP, if you get those folks involved in the innovation lifecycle early on, ideally in initiation, but certainly in ideation and pilot, and they become part of the process and part of the solutions, then that really closes or shrinks the OGAP, because then they're willing and interested and able to really take on this new idea because they've been involved in it and they don't have that sort of allergic reaction that we often see when you approach people and ask them to do things differently and to change their approach to work. So I encourage all innovators to think about the O-gap and to plan for the adoption of their idea before they're even sure that it works. And then just to finish off the steps of the O-gap, there's operationalization, as I mentioned, which is really when you have broad adoption and an organization starts to realize the value of this new idea. Then there's optimization, when the new idea or innovation is in the hands of the end users and they may be tweaking it and adding their own special uses to the idea. And then the last step is really sort of the end of the life cycle and when you can either stop using the solution or potentially restart the process again. And this period of sunsetting and ending an innovation is actually sometimes quite difficult to know when it's actually time to start over again because workflows changed or there's new technology needs. But that's sort of the arc of the innovation life cycle. You know, six steps and the pesky O-gap. But I really believe that having this paradigm in mind and using it can be incredibly helpful for innovators to understand what to expect as they're going and developing an innovation, and also for organizations to plan and build successful innovation activities and programs.
So you've really brought sort of a scientific method to the process. Maybe that does come from your background. Material science. But, you know, I was just thinking while you're walking me through the process, I want to pose a hypothetical and tell me how, and it's a common one, but tell me how you would approach the change process affecting change. So let's say that the CEO of a large integrated health system comes to you and says, I see the writing on the wall. We're moving towards value-based care, value-based payments. Our outcomes-based, everything that we're doing is one day going to be compensated for our results, for our quality and our outcomes. But yet, as I look at our organization today, we're all fee-for-service. The docs are billing. The hospitals are billing. I don't think that people see it. Maybe they think it's coming, but maybe they think it's 10, 20 years down the road. I want to get my organization prepared for this monumental change. And I know I'm going to have some resistance. And I'm bringing you into my organization to help me with this process. What would you do?
Well, first of all, I'd congratulate the leader on having some vision and some understanding of where healthcare is going and wanting to plan for the future. I think a lot of people get very caught up in the day-to-day management of organizations. And, you know, it's actually absolutely critical in an organization that there be vision in order for innovation to thrive. Without sponsorship at the highest levels, it's really hard to drive innovation. And a lot of innovation programs that start sort of at the mid-level of management that don't have that type of sponsorship at the top will die and wither. But so I say to the CEO, congratulations, you're spot on, and it's great that you're coming up with a plan. Let's actually take this challenge and walk it through the innovation life cycle. Let's start by carefully crafting what it is that we're solving for, and let's bring folks in and help paint the picture for them. And then let's begin to actually think about some ideas about how healthcare is going to change, could change. And then let's build some pilots and test how it works and start collecting the data, because the data is going to be critical to convincing the physicians that these projects are effective. And this approach is really, really is reflective of how we began to develop a telehealth strategy at Boston Children's Hospital, where there was a recognition that once we became an accountable care organization and were responsible for the cost of care, that we were going to want to leverage telehealth, that we were going to want to deliver care virtually and remotely and to connect with patients in their homes and provide care in low-cost venues and to provide support before and after a surgical procedure in the home. So, you know, we went through this process. We had some excited clinical champions. And I think that when you are innovating in a large healthcare organization, in addition to leadership, sponsorship at the highest levels, you also need clinical champions who want to test and develop and lead new ideas. So we had a variety of clinical champions in different areas, and we built pilots to test out whether telehealth solutions would work and what it would be like. And one example was we set up the ability to have follow-up telehealth visits at home for patients who had had a concussion, because while the patients often came in early on, right when they thought that they had a concussion, they often didn't come back for the six-week checkup to determine whether it was safe for the kids to reengage in sports and become more active. And that six-week checkup is actually very important to the overall healing. And so the brain injury clinic worked with our innovation team to create the ability to do virtual telehealth follow-up, to do concussion diagnosis, and to really improve the quality of care that we deliver. But so I think just to sum up, that vision and leadership are critical to driving innovation. Clinical champions are absolutely necessary. And then following the innovation life cycle and going through a structured process to bring forward and test new ideas are all the key components for driving innovation.
Every year, we do an executive survey with ACO leaders. We've been doing that since 2014. And anyway, one of the questions that we ask, it's actually a two-part question. It's like, what gets in the way of, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, what gets in the way of the best quality that you can provide, and then what prevents you from keeping costs down? And invariably, either the number one or number two response is physician engagement. And so that's, of course, within the ACO context, but I'm thinking about my hypothetical as well as your specific on Boston Children's, that how do you get physicians engaged? And do you find, and no offense to our physician listeners, do you find that they're resistant to change?
So I think the physician population reflects the population at large, and that there really is a bell curve in terms of interest and appetite around innovation. And in every organization I have been in, there have been physician innovators that are excited, that are passionate, that have their own ideas, want to try out new things. And so my advice to someone who is building or leading an innovation program within a healthcare organization is to reach out and find those innovators, those natural born folks that are curious and want to try new ideas, and to begin to work with them. And over time, as you engage with the people who are excited about innovation, and they begin to share the results of their work, what you start to do is move through the bell curve, and people who had some ideas but weren't sure how to engage now see a path forward, and they too want to become innovators. And over time, you can actually engage many, many physicians actively in the innovation process if you do a good job supporting innovation and promoting innovation and really focusing on building a culture where innovation is supported and recognized. One of the reasons people often don't want to engage in innovation is they're afraid of failure,
right,
which is a very natural part of innovation. It's part of the life cycle. And if you're not failing, sometimes you're probably not innovating enough. So you really have to create an environment where it feels safe to experiment and it feels safe to have failures, and where, in fact, the results of those failures are celebrated. And people say, hey, we learned something, and that's great. And now we're going to go back to the drawing board, use our learnings, and come up with a new idea. So I don't think there's anything that inherently prevents physicians from engaging in innovation and from becoming change agents. But it has to be done in a thoughtful and systematic approach. And I do think that just throwing things at people without explanation, without sufficient education, without preparation, without, you know, leadership is not a recipe for success.
So Naomi, I wanted to switch gears for the last part of our interview and talk a little bit about pharma. And I think about this a lot. And by the way, I'm sure that based on, I think, what our audience is, we probably have about maybe half of our audience is from the pharma world. What does the future of pharma look like? And then talk to me a little bit about innovation and digital health. We talked a lot about this on our pre-call. But I think it'd be valuable for folks to hear your perspective in this area.
Well, thank you, John. That's a great question and an area that I'm very passionate about. I think pharma is a, is doing amazing things for the healthcare industry in terms of bringing forward new therapies. And I'm sure they're going to continue to do that. But I think that we're at a tipping point now where there's an opportunity for pharmaceutical industries to grow and expand their business by starting to leverage the amazing telehealth and digital health solutions that are out there. I really think that we are on the cusp of a digital health revolution, that there's all sorts of digital innovations that can be brought to the patient and can provide additional value. I mentioned early on that when I was at Biogen, we were involved in innovation beyond the molecule strategy. And I think the time has really come for pharma to embrace the opportunity to go what we call beyond the pill with digital solutions. And when I think about, you know, the opportunity for pharma to leverage digital health solutions, I think about four sort of main areas. I think there are opportunities in digiceuticals, which are digital therapies that are delivered via technology, so apps and games that actually treat conditions. I think that there's all sorts of very interesting things happening around clinical grade digital information, so diagnostic tools that are being built for the mobile phone and for the computer, and I can give you some examples. I think the third area where pharma has the potential to really embrace digital health is around medication adherence, all sorts of tools and solutions that can help patients better adhere to medication regimens. And I think the fourth area is around virtual patient care and the potential to leverage telehealth solutions to connect and support patients when they're on therapy or even when they are in a clinical trial. So I believe that we are on the cusp of an opportunity to really offer patients new forms of value along with their therapies that come in a digital format. And I believe that the pharmaceutical companies that really embrace this drug and digital approach are going to be the ones that are going to gain market share, gain patient loyalty, and be able to sell more drugs in the long term. But I think what's really exciting is for the patient to be on the receiving end of all of the benefits that digital health has to offer.
Naomi, I think part of the problem is pharma is, there, broadly speaking, is laser focused on innovation. So bringing new compounds to life and to market, and then commercializing and marketing those drugs. And it's very much so that even when they talk about the patient journey and understanding the patient journey, there still is that very limited interaction, not really so much of a sense of the patient as the customer and providing the whole customer experience. So as an example, I sit on the Global Council on Alzheimer's disease, and at one meeting I had suggested to a pharma company who had a drug in the pipeline that, you know, look at the entire Alzheimer's patient, look at all the things that they're dealing with, and especially the caregivers. And, you know, maybe the role of the drug rep in the future is going to be something that looks like a care navigator, right? That's a one-stop resource to be able to, and of course, tying technology into it too. But I can't tell you how much resistance that I had to that. Oh, legal and regulatory and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, well, look, if you view that patient as a customer and you're looking to enhance or, you know, complete that customer experience, think about healing the patient in the way that Amazon perfectly delivers packages to your door next day for free, or other obvious examples in consumer marketing. But there, I just get this resistance. It happens time and again. I wonder what your thoughts are, because that does relate to innovation and change management.
Absolutely. So I agree with you that there are a lot of pharmaceutical companies that don't see the writing on the wall yet and don't see how digital health can help them achieve their goals. I think that what we're going to see is that there are pharmaceutical companies that do embrace digital health, and they are going to be the winners in the market because they are going to have better patient engagement, better patient loyalty, better sales. And that once we see some big wins and some companies start to get out ahead, that the other pharmaceutical companies will also, you know, hop in. But I think it's a conservative industry and not everyone wants to embrace change. But I think there are so many opportunities to really support patients better, whether it's, you know, apps that educate patients about the therapies. And, you know, pharmaceutical companies are putting up websites and they are very interested in patient education. So that feels like, you know, not such a big leap for them. But I think that there are all sorts of diagnostics and tools that will eventually be paired with their therapies. You know, as an example, there's a company that offers a solution that can diagnose and track Parkinson's disease based on someone's typing pattern. So the typing on the keyboard, the typing on the phone or tablet, it's an algorithm that runs in the background. And I think eventually no one will be prescribing a Parkinson's drug and not collecting that data along the way. And I think that the companies that get out there first with the solution will be selected by doctors because there'll be a recognition that they are providing more value to the patient. I think also there's an opportunity to use digital solutions to help address side effects from some of the drugs. And, you know, not all pharmaceutical companies want to admit that there are side effects from their drugs. But again, if you can provide more value to the patient, if you can keep them compliant with the drug because you're addressing some of the issues that they're having through a digital solution, you, the pharmaceutical company, will enhance patient loyalty. And, you know, I think that the regulatory pathways are not really a reason not to go down a path of digital health. The FDA has been, you know, very welcoming of digital health solutions. They're creating a mechanism for evaluation that I think is very fair. They said certain digital health solutions don't even require supervision. Those are a lot of the health and wellness apps that we see all over the place. So I think they have done a great job opening the door and engaging with the community, the digital health community, around how to make sure that digital health solutions are safe, effective, and available. So, you know, I think that this is a great opportunity. It's a turning point in the industry. And just as it's important in hospitals, it's important in pharma for leadership to have vision and to recognize where digital health can take them. And there certainly are some pharmaceutical CEOs that are starting to talk about this, and some organizations are starting to appoint chief digital officers. So the writing is on the wall, and some folks are even starting to read it, I think.
Just my side note opinion after working with pharma for a number of years, regulatory, just that word, seems to be a knee-jerk reaction to any kind of change, any kind of innovative approach. It's like, oh, regulatory is never going to let us do that. And so it's like, you know, they're there to protect, right? Obviously, legal and regulatory. But they're not the enemy, and there's a way of working around it, a way of presenting your case that just makes sense.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I saw this time and again that, you know, the first question that pharmaceutical leaders have when talking about innovation in digital health is what are the regulatory impacts, and, you know, what does legal think? And I actually wrote a Harvard Business Review article on how to innovate in heavily regulated industries, and with some tips and suggestions for engaging the folks that could be the naysayers. And a lot of it is around engaging them early, taking the time to bring them into the process. You know, if you do show up at the regulatory or legal department with a fully conceived new innovation that you're ready to launch, chances are they are going to want to put the brakes on and to slow you down. But if you engage them as partners early on, think about crossing the O-gap, recognizing that they're part of operationalization, I think that they often will be supporters and can become champions once they understand the innovation, they appreciate the business need and the opportunity, and they're not under pressure to make an immediate go, no-go decision. So I think that legal and regulatory folks can be friends and supporters when done properly.
Yeah, quick story before we wrap things up. Years ago, I was they call a multi-source product manager. So I had all of the drugs that weren't marketed actively. So, I don't know, 10,000 SKUs of drugs. But anyway, preparing for a trade show, and I remember the agency put something together that said something like Abbott quality erythromycins, you know, that you can count on. And regulatory said, no, you can't say the word quality. I mean, what are you talking about? Well, because you don't have any data to support. And I just wanted to throw my hands in the air of like, please, you know, like give me a break, you know? So tell me how, I guess last question, keep it in the pharma realm. How can pharma engage with the digital health community?
It's a great question, because if you believe that digital health is the future of pharma, they should definitely be engaging with the community. You know, there's different approaches that can be taken. Some pharmaceutical companies have business development groups, and they're looking to try to do joint ventures with early stage startups. Some folks are looking to use their venture arms to invest in digital health startups as a way to sort of see what's going on. But one of the areas that I am very excited about is actually engaging with the digital health community through online innovation challenges, and was recently involved with a large pharmaceutical company that wanted to engage the digital health community to look for solutions and better ways to deliver care for patients with inflammatory bowel disease, IBD. And so they launched an online challenge and went out to the community and said, hey, share with us your best digital health ideas. Obviously, they offered a prize of $50,000 in this case for the best idea. And I think that external innovation challenges are an amazing way for pharma to see what's out in the digital health community, to plant a flag and let folks know that they're interested in digital health innovation. They can focus in various therapeutic areas, as Eli Lilly did around the Transforming IBD online challenge. And I think this is a really exciting way for pharmaceutical companies to get involved in digital health without building an internal digital health development team and to start building apps and solutions themselves. I think taking advantage and sort of crowdsourcing what's out there is a very exciting and cutting edge way for pharma to engage with digital health.
Well, and it's good for the entrepreneurial community as well.
Definitely.
To be able to have those opportunities. So before we go, tell me again a little bit about your company and where you're focused.
Sure. So Health Innovation Strategies really has two primary areas of focus. We support large healthcare organizations, providers, pharma, payers, medical device companies on building and optimizing innovation programs. So helping them think about an innovation strategy and an execution of a program that will help them meet their ongoing innovation objectives. And this can be internal innovation or engaging externally. That's all part of the strategy that we work through. We help organizations that have innovation programs that aren't delivering the value, rebuild, rebrand, redesign those innovation programs. We also run innovation activities, whether it's innovation challenges, hackathons, pitch events for large healthcare organizations. Our other major area of focus is around digital health strategy and helping both pharma and provider think about how to take advantage of the digital health revolution, the digital health explosion that's happening, and come up with a thoughtful strategy for taking advantage of and leveraging the best ideas that are out there.
Terrific. Well, you've given us a lot of things to think about, Naomi. I appreciate your spending time. This was an outstanding, interesting interview. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time out.
Well, John, thank you. I really appreciate the invitation. You asked some amazing questions. I really enjoyed chatting with you. And I appreciate the opportunity to share what I'm doing and what my firm's doing.
That's all for this week. From all of us at Darwin Research Group, thanks for listening. If you haven't yet done so, please rate and review Healthcare Rounds wherever you listen to podcasts. Healthcare Rounds is produced by Diana Nikolic and engineered by Andrew Rojek. Theme music by John Marchica. Darwin Research Group provides advanced market intelligence and in-depth customer insights to healthcare executives. Our strategic focus is on healthcare delivery systems and the global shift toward value-based care. To learn more about us, go to darwinresearch.com or send an email to insights@darwinresearch.com. Or if you'd like to get right to it, call us at 888-402-3465. See you next round.